There we
It
go.
worked.
It worked. How about that? Thank you so much for coming. As I said earlier, this is going to be a little bit participatory, so I'm counting on you guys to, fill it out so that all the folks who come to the recorded version of the seminar will get the benefit of your wisdom in the discussion. I'll just mention that a couple of things. Number one, this is the last one of this season, the last seminar, and we will be on summer break until the fall, starting back after Labor Day with Sarah, Derek Woodard, layman from the seminary. And I know he's been before and will offer us a real treat. And let's open with a word of prayer. God, we thank you for your church, for the opportunity to grow in your ways, to gain wisdom from you. We thank you for the fellowship and the opportunity to learn to trust in you and in our neighbors. In Jesus' name, we pray these things. Amen. Okay, so did anyone? Well, I will just mention that the seminar from last week, which was not a technical success, was a marvelous success from the standpoint of the content that Robin Pashby offered. And that is now posted on the seminar website. So you can watch her presentation. We're going to watch a little bit of it, a 10-minute segment, just to provide background for this discussion. And you can watch the whole thing on the Westminster Seminar website. It's in the weekly email, the link to it, so you can just go straight to it from that link, and you'll be in business. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the role of trust in community and spiritual life, and the handout. Welcome, Anne, is all about trusting in God. And I happen to know an organist who was willing to help out with this hymn. And you'll see on your handout the words to that hymn. And Sarah, I'm going to let you hit
it. Ready to do it? Okay.
And for the folks online, I owe a small apology. We don't have the settings on Zoom fixed so that they won't filter out background music. Zoom is very clever about filtering out black background music, and you have to go through two or three levels of menus, which apparently escaped me. Joan, I hope you can hear us now. You can give us a thumbs up if you can, or if you can't, please holler and we'll adjust. But anyway, that hymn has been in every Presbyterian hymnal since 1933. It's kind of a fundamental statement of the role of trust in God in our faith. And I'll just read you a bit from the Hymnal Companion. It's hardly surprising to learn that this tune has been popular, though the breadth of its use has been remarkable. Footnote to the editor's preface in the 1863 Winkworth volume, cited in the text discussion, this tune became so popular that within 100 years after its appearance, no less than 400 hymns had been written to be sung to it. Bach used it in 8 cantatas and 4 organ pieces. Felix Mendelssohn adopted it in a 4-4 version for a chorale in his oratorio, St. Paul. Other examples can be cited from Robert Schumann, Johannes Brahms, and William Albright. The tune name used here is the first line of the text in German, Wir nur den lieben Gott. I'm not a German scholar, so forgive me for that pronunciation. Tune is also frequently named by the composer's surname, which is Neumark. Less understandable is the use of the tune names Bremen and Augsburg, since neither of those German cities figures in Neumark's biography. The stained glass window that you see up here is, yeah, I was just seeing that I can. That's from the church where Neumark practiced. Can you just X that box, Sarah? It's because you don't have the volume off. Don't worry about it. Okay, so you want to admit Chip? I'll admit him. Okay, so what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about a few fundamentals of trust. We're going to talk about the biblical concept of trust. And then we're going to talk about trust in our communities and our spiritual lives. And I just want to invite everybody to pipe up. Sarah's there with the microphone, and she's going to be nimble and ringing around to you, because this is intended beyond just the hymn for you to participate. But to start with, I guess I do want to apologize for the technical snafu. Yes, last week we do have the seminar that my friend Robin Pashby, she's an outstanding presenter, and she really put time into that presentation. It is posted on the church website in this week's email with the church updates. There's a link that will take you straight to it, and you can watch the whole thing. But I'm going to turn this over to Robin for a few minutes to give you a snapshot of some basics of trust. with any luck, this will work.
So I've talked about the social implications and the biological implications of trust, and now the psychological side of trust. So let's sort of break this down. What erodes trust? Well, certainly, if reliability is something that builds trust, unpredictability erodes it. So when people say one thing and do another, or don't reliably follow through, that erodes trust. We also know that avoidance or secrecy tends to erode trust. Can't tell you how often people come into my therapy room saying that they feel less trusting of maybe their partner just because they don't talk about the hard things in their relationship. Kind of becomes obvious that there's something people are avoiding talking about in a marriage or in a friendship. And the more you avoid, the more likely that the trust in that relationship is eroded. And when those conversations do come up, the more defensiveness, the more defenses you throw up, are more likely to erode trust in that relationship. But of course, on the flip side, there are things that build trust as well. So consistency or reliability, doing what you say you'll do over and over and over again, that builds trust. Transparency. In my therapy sessions, oftentimes I will hear something that a client says to me, and it takes me a minute to think about what I want to reply because I try to be really thoughtful. And when I pause in a therapy session, often what I say is, let me tell you what's going through my mind right now. I'm thinking about X, Y, and Z. Simply doing that transparency of what I'm thinking about and what my experience is in the therapy room builds trust because, in the silence, a lot of times my client has all kinds of ideas going through their head about what I might be thinking or doing. So I just share exactly what I'm thinking. And also being vulnerable, sharing hard experiences, or sharing the thing that maybe makes you a little uncomfortable. The more vulnerability that we share in trusted circles, the more strength and resiliency that trust in that relationship has. So what I'd like to do now is move to some tools to help you build trust in your relationships and in your communities and in yourself. So how do we actually do this? So first, we create spaces for open dialogue rather than expecting conformity. So it's so common that you go someplace and you expect everyone else in the room to have the same mindset as you. But if we approach situations expecting conformity or expecting sameness, then we actually close down opportunities for dialogue. When we go to a space acknowledging that other people might feel differently than we do, then we create space for open dialogue and we start to enhance trust. When we encourage questions and critical thinking instead of assuming unquestioning belief, we facilitate trust in relationships. So when I talk to my daughter, who's 10 years old, and she tells me something really bad happened to her at school, or she didn't do so well on a test, instead of assuming that I know what's best for her, if I ask her, I wonder what you're thinking about this. I wonder what you think might have gone differently. Asking her to think about it, encouraging her questions, encouraging her critical thinking fosters trust like no other. And interestingly, there's actually some more recent data in the early 2020s that shows that when we engage in what's called emotional acknowledgement, we build trust. But especially for negative emotions. So here's how that works. Let's say you're in your home, and the thing you want to do the most is just flop down on the couch and have a cold glass of water and wind down at the end of the day, maybe watching your favorite show on Netflix or reading your favorite book. But you look over and you see that your partner or your roommate or someone next to you looks pretty sad. What we might do is feel tempted to just sort of pretend you didn't notice, right? But if you simply look over and say, "Hey, is everything okay? You look kind of sad." Suddenly, trust goes through the roof, right? Because, and actually, John Gottman, Brené Brown taught us this, that John Gottman's work, he's a very well-known relationship or couples therapist. And one of the things that he talks about is that there's always two paths in any discussion with your partner. There's the path of trust and the path of betrayal. And basically, avoiding is a path of betrayal. And so, by acknowledging other people's experience, especially when they're struggling, you don't have to have the answers, but what you do is you bump up trust. The other thing is that I want to talk about the importance of self-trust. Self-trust is truly the foundation of all trust, but this is an important step. How do we build self-trust? We do that by taking a few risks. So, engaging in healthy self-disclosure, in other words, by sharing a little bit about yourself, kind of like how I started today's talk, I did that intentionally. I don't usually begin talks talking about myself. That feels awkward to me, and I often feel a little embarrassed, like, well, they're not really here to know anything about me. But if I understand that healthy self-disclosure and sharing a little bit about myself engages trust and improves a trust among relationships, in relationships, then I do that, even if I feel a little uncomfortable doing it. So that builds trust in myself that I'm using the skills that I have, and it facilitates trust between you listening and me. So you can work on self-trust by sharing in a healthy way with trusted others a little more about yourself. You can also build self-trust by being authentic. Now, in our society, being authentic is actually quite a challenge. Right? There's so much perfectionism and so much social media pressure to look this way or live this life or have this home or all these things. But the more we just step into, well, this is me, all my flaws and all my strengths, this is just who I am, we build trust, not just in ourselves, but between people as well. And the more we have self-talk, self-trust and self-confidence, the more we build trust among others. So that BRAVING acronym that I talked about, the setting boundaries, having reliability in our actions and words, being accountable, being a vault, having integrity, creating spaces of non-judgment, and having a generous interpretation or assuming generosity in our intentions, that acronym works for building self-trust too. We have to think, do I have boundaries that support what my real needs are? Am I reliable to myself? Do I say what I'm going to do for myself? The beginning, I talked about how moving my body is such an important thing for me. And so many of my clients over the years have really struggled with engaging in regular activity, and they feel so distrusting of themselves. They don't want to say, yes, I'm going to go for a walk this afternoon because they're afraid that they won't follow through. Building self-trust is a step toward building trust with others. I think Maya Angelou's quote here really sums it up. She said, "I don't trust people who don't love themselves. But say, I love you."
So that's just a sample of Robin's presentation from last week, and I would encourage you, when you have a minute, to go to the link in the weekly Westminster email and take a look at the whole thing. Robin is quite an amazing individual. I just hate that she couldn't be here live with us last week, and I accept responsibility for that. Now, she talked about, let's see if I can get my slides to advance. She talked about the personal relationships and the basis for trust in those personal relationships. But what I want to move on to is a little bit of talk about the foundation of faith that trust really is. And I'll reference another hymn that came from the hymn that we sang at the outset. And that is, God is our refuge and our strength, our ever-present aid. And therefore, though the earth shall move, this world around us is not always reliable. Often we have reasons to fear, but with trust in God, we need not be afraid. And that's really, I think, a fundamental foundation for, just speaking from my own experience, why our faith in God, our faith in something that is larger and more powerful than ourselves, is so important. From James 2:17, that's often it is about works, but in fact, he is telling us that if we do not respond to our faith with works because we trust in that faith, then we have nothing. Genuine trust in God manifests in a life that seeks to follow God's purpose for us and God's commands, reflecting the sure foundation that trust in God's truth actually gives us. Does any of this resonate with anyone? I see nodding. Any comments? Sarah's there ready with the microphone. Dan?
Our men's group meets every Tuesday morning and has for years. And I was just telling John as she was talking that she's essentially defining the principles of our group. That's the reason it's so successful, because it does those things. And we didn't set out by ourselves. Ed was our facilitator for years. And then when he let we and then when he left, we questioned, could we continue? And we have. We just have each guy in the circle lead it different weeks.
Not to put words in your mouth, I'm hearing you say that over those years you've built a foundation of trust
Oh, yes.
between each other.
Yeah. And the key to that has been we focus on our weaknesses, which is not normal for a group of men.
Right.
But that creates that trust.
Right. And I suspect that her comments about self-disclosure
Oh, all of
just
that.
taps right
There's
into
not a
that.
thing she described that we don't abide by.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I find that my trust and my faith journey and my beliefs are now even so much more paramount, because I feel as though I've reached a point where I can no longer trust institutions that I thought would always be there in a certain way. I'm burdened by being a historian at heart, and I really it affects me. I mean, in safe spaces like this and the various other places that go to it, I just see my faith increasing, because it's the real bedrock of things that can't be changed, you know? So that's sort of the benefit, I guess.
I think that's a real good point. And I'll add that, you know, when you talk about over time, that trust and that faith becomes more important. I'll reflect back on my own experience about those line along those lines, which is years have a way of humbling a person, and telling you that you really do need to trust in something other than yourself. Anybody else?
Well, I have one thing to say, sort of along those lines. We're losing trust in institutions in our world today. And I think it causes a lot of us just great angst. And I'm kind of the historian type too. I respect a lot that is gone in, like, in American history and European history too. And so it's so disturbing. And yet, I found that I'm more than ever needing to go to worship and to find my solace there. I mean, I've always gone to worship, I've never stopped. But for some reason, it's just having a much greater meaning and a greater comfort in these disturbing times.
I'll also point you to the story that prompted the hymn that we started with. Georg Neumark, who was only 20 years old when he wrote this hymn, and he was on his way to study at the University of Königsberg. And on his way, he and his traveling companions were beset by robbers. They stripped them and robbed them of everything. His aspirations to study at university were taken from him in that moment. He had nothing except for a few coins that were sewn into his clothes. And he wound up in Kiel, where he found a friend in Nicholas Becker, pastor and a native of Thuringia, which was the state that they were in. And for weeks, it seemed like he was destitute and doomed, and had no prospects for his life. It had all just been wiped away. And then Becker recommended him and secured an appointment as a tutor in a household of a prominent individual. And that entirely changed his life and also inspired him to say, you know, I could not rely on myself to save myself from this situation. I had to rely on God to provide for me. And that is really what turned his life around. Yes.
Well, I'd just like to say one other thing about when this happened. It was 1641, and it was in the midst of the 30 Years' War. And in Germany, things were very bad. The war had started in 1618, and it wouldn't end until 1648. So, terrible, terrible times where many people were suffering. And so, that's kind of a part of the context that makes me appreciate the hymn even more. Yeah, dangerous time to be on the road. Yeah.
So let's take a look at Corinthians, and this is a scripture that is familiar to us, talking about the nature of love. But I think the reason that this is relevant to our discussion is because it talks about trust in other people. It says, love does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it is not self-seeking, it does not dishonor people, it is not easily angered, it doesn't keep a record of wrongs. Those wrongs get in the way of trust, you know, keeping score. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, and always perseveres. Now, the reflection here is that it's fundamental to trust in God and God's truth. It's a little bit harder to trust in the people that are around us because we all need God's grace. We need God's grace because We all screw up. We are fallen people. And if you keep score on the people around you and they keep score on you, how do you ever build trust? And yet, you know, it's not as if you can be undiscerning and trust blindly, but you have to build trust with other people. You don't build trust with God, you practice trust in God. Anybody? I see Sarah getting up.
Just now, the word that came to mind as I was listening is forgiveness.
Right.
Forgiving, because
right.
Unless you can do that.
Right.
Forgive yourself too, but and I like the fact that you talked about, I think authenticity with oneself is first and foremost to having any kind of meaningful relationships. It's you
right.
Have to be as honest and transparent as you can be, and it does open up the door to vulnerability. But yeah, so forgiveness.
I think that's so important. And that goes back to something that Robin said, which is you really have to trust yourself. And that comes from recognizing your vulnerability, but also being able to forgive yourself for where you screw up. In some of the work that I do, I get to know a lot of people who are having really serious health problems. And in our culture, we tell people that they are responsible for their own health, and people get caught in a loop of blaming themselves for their health problems. And I recall 20 years ago, talking to people dealing with some of these health problems, saying the first step for me to heal was to forgive myself for where I've landed in my health journey. John.
Yeah, I want to speak about the hymn. This speaks to me very clearly. I'm a lawyer, common sense guy, prove it, evidence, you know, but I have miracles happening which prove this hymn to be true. I'll give you an example. I have a swimming pool, and I had a problem with it. There was a clog in the inlet valve clogging up, so I couldn't get water into my pump, and I called my pool people to come and fix it, and they delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed. So my pool became so pungent with algae. It was totally emerald green. And I sort of went a little bit crazy. And I decided to go down there, complain, and tell them I need immediate assistance. On my way down to their store, this thought came to my mind. This is crazy. Stop. So I stopped my car, pulled into a driveway to turn around and go home. And what did I see but a truck passing from my pool people? And I thought, hey, this is strange. I wonder, well, I hope they go to my house. So I followed them through the byways and highways, and finally they pulled into my driveway. And they got out, and there was this one guy who was a total genius, fixed my pool and cleared up the green in less than an hour. So I've been laughing at myself ever since. And I know that this voice that said, stop it, this is crazy, was not my own common sense, because that had abandoned me already. And then the coincidence of seeing the truck just pass as I was pulling out, it was just too much for me. So I have to tell you that in spite of all my common sense, my legality, my prove it, my evidence-based thinking, my logic and all that, this is all true. Faith in God is the ultimate reality. And I'm totally convinced.
Anyone else? Okay, so let's go from that sort of personal perspective to an outward-looking perspective. And these data here come from the Pew Research Center on the right, which basically says, more or less, we're not terrible at, all over the world, we're not terrible at trusting people here in the US. In these Pew surveys, about 58% of people say that that most people can be trusted, and around the world that number is a little bit higher, at 62%. And you can see where it varies by country. It would appear that Italy has a little bit lower tendency to trust people. Some of that is cultural, and honestly, I do a lot of work with surveys and asking people questions, and a question like, do you trust people, can be highly variable depending upon how you ask it. And there is a National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago that for a long time has been doing a general social survey. And what they see in their work that they've been repeating, you know, for years and years and years, is that between 1972 and 2024, that tendency to trust people has dropped from close to 50% to more like 34% over those, about 50 years. So when you say that we're seeing things around us that make it hard for us to trust in institutions and other people, that's kind of real. And to put a line under that, I want to review something from Edelman, which is a large global public relations firm. So a public relations firm like Edelman, and that's one of the largest in the world, is all about helping organizations, and in particular businesses, understand their reputation and the trust that people put into them. And back in 1999, they started doing this global barometer of trust across multiple countries, and trying to figure out why trust seemed to be going down. This year's survey that they did, they surveyed in 28 different countries. They've surveyed 33,000 people all over the world. They've really made a name for themselves in putting a handle on how trusting are we of institutions, with about 1,100 people surveyed in each of the countries that they went to. And in the 25 years that they've been doing this, there have been a lot of strains on our ability to trust. And this timeline talks about the WTO protests. Who remembers that from 1999 when there was just such an uprising? I didn't understand it at the time. I read the news clippings and how angry people were at the World Trade Organization and global trade. And it turns out that that wasn't just a flash in the moment, but it's a theme that's been with us ever since then. And that put a dent in trust in organizations. And then in 2003, there was the invasion of Iraq, and people debated that a lot. And where can we trust the assertions that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq? I was just hearing somebody talk about one of the great regrets of Colin Powell was that he, you know, went along with the idea that yes, there are definitely weapons of mass destruction there, and he allowed himself to be misled. Then in 2008, the financial crisis put a big dent in the trust we feel toward banks. And 2016, populism took hold, really not just in the US, where we elected Donald Trump on a wave of populism, but also in England, where England exited from the European Union and is living with the consequences of that to this day. In 2020, COVID-19 put a dent in the trust that we have toward public health officials. And then in 2022, the invasion of Ukraine created some strains all around the world. The result of all this is that we see that there is fear that has grown dramatically in the last few years that leaders, whether it's government leaders, business leaders, or journalists and reporters, are lying to us. Up is bad. There is more of a belief that these people are lying to us. I'm reminded of a little phrase from this detective, this murder mystery show from Scotland called Shetland. I don't know if anybody's watched that, but at the end of a pivotal part in that season, the detectives say to each other, "They're lying to us. They're all lying to us." There's a lot of that in the air. And with that comes this feeling that that the wealthy are taking more than their fair share, and that they are causing many of our problems. And this is a symptom of distrust. And what I will say is that we are living objectively in a time of great disparities in wealth. I don't know if anybody, I'm just at the start of listening to the audiobook of the haves and the have-yots. And then you have folks in desperate circumstances next to that incredible wealth sitting on the doorstep of a church with no prospects for their life. And that attracts attention. It's the disparity there is glaring and as great as it's been really in any time in recorded history. 4 in 10 seeing all of this say, well, the answer is hostile activism. That's not a terribly good thing for living in trust, living in community, living out our faith, but it is a fact of how people are feeling about their brothers and sisters, their community, the other people around them. And in fact, 60% have grievances against business, against government, and against the rich. And I think you hear those grievances in dialogue about public policy these days, where in some of the dialogue you hear, you say, you know, we can't let those people get their way. And that occurs in all dimensions of the political spectrum. That kind of grievance sets us up for zero-sum thinking, which says, if somebody else gets something, they're going to take it from me. And I recall when I was trying to wrap my head around suicide bombers taking these planes and flying them into the World Trade Center, where does that come from? And it comes from a fundamental disconnect of what I think was the essence of Christ's message to us, which was a message of abundance. Not a message of my gain has to be your loss, but a message of God is providing for, intends to provide for all of us. And that gets us back to that issue of trust. And are we, in fact, when we think in zero-sum terms, living out that thinking of abundance that Christ brought to the world? That also imposes a trust penalty, the grievance mentality. When people have low grievance, when they don't feel like people are taking from them, that they've been shafted, so to speak, they have more trust in their communities, in business, in government, in nonprofit organizations, in medicine. And when they feel that sense of grievance, the sense that they've gotten a raw deal, then trust is low. So this is where we get to pure discussion. I just want to close with these thoughts. We are called to trust in God and to love our neighbors. In loving our neighbors, that whole idea of trusting our neighbors, because we are flawed creatures who need grace, that whole idea of trust is a little bit more of a challenge. And then the question becomes, how can we come to understand that and live out the faith that we're called to live? And I don't propose to have the answers, but I know that there are half a dozen people here who have some good ideas. So we have the mic ready to go. And I know we have a few people online. If you want to pop a question into the chat, I'm happy to hear it. John.
I just have a major question here for me. Are trusting God and trusting others two different things?
What, and what's your answer to that?
We have to work on helping others care about others.
I think those are, I would agree, and I think that trusting God and trusting others is a very different exercise. When we don't trust others, I would ask the question of, is that possibly a suggestion to us or a reason for us to reflect and say, if I don't trust Sarah, am I indeed trusting? How strong is my trust, my faith in God?
I would say, well, what about people who do really bad things, whether it's to you personally or to the culture? Evil people, people who lie, you know, bad people.
Right.
Do you trust them? I know love your enemy. I get that. But trust?
And anybody have an answer to that one? Yes, Sarah.
It seems to me that that's, my personal thought on it is that it seems to be somewhat of a sliding scale or an extension. The only thing that I have absolute trust in is my faith. And that's a question of boundaries about how my experiential relationship is that garners trust in others, that I think we have all of a sense you have to earn trust. It shouldn't be blind. That's a fool's journey in my mind. So I see that as like a continuum with certain reasonable boundaries along the way. And the most fulfilling relationship for me is when I've been able to be patient enough to explore them, the trust gets larger. And I see the beauty of it. You know, to me, that's faith, because it's not called certainty. It's called faith. I'm not sure that everything that I do in my faith journey really matters. I only know that someday, I guess, but I'm going to live my life in that way with faith in that. That's how.
Anyone else? Anne.
I agree with you that, you know, there are certain circumstances where you have to decide whether this person or individual or this idea is trustworthy. And it's your responsibility to make that discernment. You can't be blind about it. You can't be naive about it. But also, it involves a certain amount of vulnerability that you have to allow yourself. And if it's wrong, ends up being wrong, then you are accountable for then dealing with your mistaken trust. But I think where our mistrust is worse now is that we're doing it in a group sense. You know, we collect people into a group and say, I don't trust that group at all. And we judge people that way rather than giving them time, as we should, as you said, to know them. And so we can build trust and can build that on what kinds of things can I trust him or her. It's a lifelong practice of discernment.
I think that's excellent. But I think, again, the dividing line is absolute trust in God, which is kind of illustrated, if nothing else, by the story of Job, whose faith was not shaken despite terrible, terrible things that happened to him, seemingly with, you know, no justification, sometimes, you know, visited on him by other humans and sometimes by divine, you know, by an act of God, so to speak. And yet he trusted that God would work his purpose out for him. And the losses he suffered were really, really, really real. I mean, they're profound. The other thing that that raises for me is one of my favorite paradoxical phrases, which is all generalizations are dangerous. Because that's a generalization, right? So, but it's so true, you know, you can't trust these people. Well, that's a generalization. It's not bad to say, my index of suspicion might be a little higher here when I see somebody following me down a dark alley. That might not be real good, but still, you cannot know. The only thing you can have absolute faith in is God.
So are we left with the conclusion that our trust in God is absolute, but our trust in others is relative?
Perhaps. A thought I would offer is that our trust in God is conditional on our trust in God. Our trust in others is conditional based on our trust in God. This is a child of God, an imperfect child of God, and he, she might disappoint me, but God will not. That's just my thought.
If you don't mind, a voice from the ceiling.
Yes, go, Doug.
Someone said something very profound to me walking into a room, and some of the guys who I know have heard this before. He said, straight up, the world runs at the speed of trust. I've never found that to be untrustworthy. We wouldn't even cross a street if we couldn't see safety. I know this is broad brush reasoning, but trust is fundamental to our lives. So will we choose not to speak when we hear win-lose kind of thinking, when cynicism is present? If we can't assert a generosity perspective in the face of it, we're not taking a stand in a world that is increasingly untrusting. Trust isn't blind or reckless, but we must trust. And that's what I put in the chat. But our faith must be complete trust in God. And we must operate on that, not simply speak it. Or we'll lose this battle of society. It's that fundamental as far as I'm concerned. You really got to start by trusting people before you ask them to prove themselves first.
Okay.
Done preaching.
Thank you for that, Doug. Anyone else? We're kind of getting close to time, so I don't want any profound thoughts to go unsaid. Anne?
In the beginning, I don't know whether it was Sarah, but somebody said something about our history or we don't trust institutions anymore. I think, and how institutions used to be more trustworthy. I'm finding it to be opposite. From what I was taught in history way back when I was very young, was that institutions are trustworthy. And now that I'm learning history, real history, I'm learning how untrustworthy our leaders were in history. Either they were deceiving purposely, or they were rather naive, or they were stupid in what they were judging the right thing to do. But I don't think that we're any different in our history now than we were before. I just think we're less, we don't camouflage it as much as we used to.
It's almost like humans have always been sort of flawed and in need of grace.
Absolutely. So I don't think our institutions are any worse off. I just think we're more questioning and not believing without thought that the leaders are going to make the right choice.
Right, right.
Ronald Reagan, the trust but verify.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A phrase along those lines that I hear a lot is, in God we trust, all others bring data. All others bring data. And I'll leave it at that unless somebody has a concluding comment. Just really thank you for your participation in this and all year. And I want to give sincere thanks to Robin, who I think will also take in this recording, for preparing a wonderful seminar for last week, which she trusted me to get out there live, and I didn't. My bad. But I'm really grateful for the effort she went into for her presentation, and hope that you all will go to the website and take the time to listen to it. Her slides are there too. Thank you very much.